let's see what happens. Today is June 12th, 2015. We're at the home of Tom Martin, sitting at the kitchen table with Rick Tidrick, David Gansey, Jerry Robertson. And Rick, let's start with you. Could you please spell your name for me, please?
Yeah, Rick, R-I-C-K. That's my nickname. My first name is actually Rodman, R-O-D-M-A-N. L, middle initial, Tidrick, T-I-D-R-I-C-K.
My official name is Joseph David Gansey, Jr., but I've never been, ever put Jr. down on my name. I go by Dave, my middle name. My first name is Joseph.
What year were you born?
1937.
Okay, so Dave Gansey born in 1937.
1937.
Rick was also born in 1937. And also here with us is...
1937. Jerry Robertson. That's J-E-R-R-Y. Middle initial D as in dog. Robertson, R-O-B-E-R-T-S-O-N.
Excellent. Thank you all so much for being here tonight. My name is Tom Martin. And we have... these guys are all... amazing climbers in Grand Canyon. I'm going to try to build this together. Rick, when did you first come to see Grand Canyon?
To see the canyon itself?
I mean, tell me about the first time you saw Grand Canyon.
Well, I lived in Flagstaff when I was 1 to 4 years of age. So I lived here, so I saw the Grand Canyon then, back in the late 30s. I moved to Phoenix. Lived there for many years. So I've been around the Grand Canyon a lot because I grew up in Arizona for the most part.
And Dave?
I saw the Grand Canyon for the first time. I forget the exact year it was. I was out of high school and I was taking a Phoenix College course, I believe it was in geology. We went up the Grand Canyon and hiked down it and back up, and I collapsed about the not the red ball but the Coconino sandstone. None of us were really prepared for the hike, and
this was roughly 1957-ish.
Yeah, about then. My memory on this thing.
Okay.
And that's my first introduction to it. I saw it in pictures and things before that, but my first real going over the rim and walking down in it.
And Jerry, you?
My mom was born and raised in Williams, and her dad worked for the railroad. And with him in the mail car on the railroad when I was 6 years old, I went to the Grand Canyon the first time.
Wow.
Didn't hike in the canyon, of course, at that age, but that's when I first saw the Grand Canyon.
So that would have been 1943?
Yep.
What do you remember about that train ride?
Very little. Other than I was along with my grandpa in the car, and we puffer-bellied our way up there in a steam-driven engine. Yeah.
Wow.
Of course, back then, they didn't have diesels running, at least not that I was aware.
And then, so... and go back to Rick, born in Flagstaff. Then would you continually go back to the Grand Canyon? You went down to Phoenix. Would your parents come back up to the canyon? Or?
Well, first of all, I wasn't born in Flagstaff. Mm. I moved here when I was 6 months old.
Okay.
Left when I was 4 or 5 to Phoenix.
What did your parents do?
My dad was a barber, and my mother owned Lazy PK Ranch here in Flagstaff.
Wow.
And then they bought a larger ranch, which is on the way to the Snow Bowl. There are two stone pillars stand today, with about 200 acres, and they were raising Palominos and Arabians.
Wow.
And the Arabian horse that they raised, Mustafa, was a very famous horse. Became the top Arabian in the country in the mid-40s, and is documented in Arizona highways and many other places. Never lost a show. And was stud fees in those days was like $500, and it was the top stud in the United States. It was buried on the McCormick Ranch in Scottsdale.
Wow.
They bought them and had him for the last few years.
So. Okay. So how did you start climbing in the canyon?
Well, I started out at a junior college in Menlo Park, California. Got involved with the Stanford University Alpine Club. Became leader my freshman year in the University Alpine Club at Stanford.
So you were hiking in the Sierras then? No. Granite? No?
No, I was in Yosemite Valley climbing, among many other places. But getting to the Grand Canyon, a friend of mine...
Well, hang on. Let's not leave the Yosemite Valley just yet.
Okay.
There's a big wall in that valley. I mean, like big, straight El Capitan type wall. Is that the kind of stuff you were doing?
Out there, I got into technical climbing, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
That was 1955.
Okay. Gold line? Pitons?
All the essentials in those days was not at all like it is today.
What kind of material did you have then? This is in the mid late 50s in Yosemite Valley.
Yeah, basic army angles and various assortment of pitons and a hammer and ropes and clutter shoes or boots. Clutter shoes was a type of shoe for that day. And our bodies. So, anyhow.
And then let's take that to Grand Canyon. So you came to Grand Canyon with a lot of climbing skill.
I did, yes.
And when was that? When did you first look at Grand Canyon as a place to climb?
Well, I developed some climbing skills in the valley and other locations in California. And then I went also on an expedition to Cordillera Blanca in Peru in 1957. And 58 is when we made, Dave and I, and Jerry had been involved in that as well. The first descent of Zoroaster's temple. But at that time, a friend of mine, John Harlan, who Jerry knows very well, he and I climbed for about a year and a half together before I left California and moved back to Arizona to school. And we had talked about Zoroaster's temple. We talked about a lot of different projects, but we never initiated anything in that movement. But I was very aware of it because I grew up here in the state.
So I'm just going to double check. John Harlan, the mathematics professor in Tucson at the University of Arizona?
No, he is the fellow who fell on the Eiger during direct descent back in 1966.
Okay, thank you.
So that's another...
Yes, thank you.
Another famous American mountaineer.
Okay. Yeah. All right, so by 58, you guys are...
I was going to share another thing that
three
of us were involved. If you remember the plane crash over the Grand Canyon, two planes came together in
1956.
The three of us came up to offer our services.
And?
I didn't get with you all.
You were not? Was Jerry and I then? Okay.
And my brothers both.
And your brothers both? Okay. But it wasn't accepted because they brought in Swiss Mountaineering and Rocky Mountain Group.
But we watched them take bodies out of that helicopter as they brought it in, body bags.
There you go.
And that was over at the airport, at the Red Mountain Airport?
Yes.
Okay. And how did it, did you guys take that okay? All right, they've got some other people with this? I mean...
We just thought it was an outside chance. We knew that they had experts coming in.
Okay.
But we had a bit of climbing experience and knew a little bit and thought we could help.
Okay. All right. And then, Dave, how did you kind of get into climbing, and how did you, let's start there.
Well, I guess the very first thing that piqued my unknown desire for climbing and mountaineering was reading the book Kingdom of Adventure, Everest. I forget the author. And something just clicked inside me and said, I want to do that. And I tried to find out if anybody else was doing that in the Phoenix area. And I found out there was a group called the Kachinas and a guy named Pedrick, I think that was his name. Jerry may remember more than me on this one. Ken or Ken Pedrick or somebody Pedrick.
Ben Pedrick.
And that they were climbers. So I tried to get a hold. I think I got a hold of him, and he referred me to you, Jerry Robertson. So then I called Jerry out of the blue, and then Jerry took me climbing one day. I remember Camelback Mountain, I think it was.
Papago Park.
Was it Papago Park? Yeah. Papago Park for the first time, and work boots and shorts and straw hats, that kind of thing. And so we kind of bonded on that and started climbing from there together, and eventually ended up going, well, I don't know how far you want to carry it, but we eventually ended up, well, Jerry knew Rick, so we ended up going to Yosemite Valley together and doing some climbing, and those were the early days in the 50s. You know.
Don't forget the monk now, the praying monk.
The praying monk, that's a little traditional, I guess you could call it, climbs. The Arizona Mountaineering Club always had beginning climbers climb a little pinnacle.
Camelback Mountain area.
And this would have been 55, 56-ish?
When was it, Jerry?
6-ish, probably.
That was in June of 56.
56? Jerry?
We'd made the second ascent of it.
Of what?
To the monk.
Oh, did you? Of the monk?
Or who was with me?
The three of us.
Three of us. Yeah.
Climbed the monk, yeah, I guess. Which is a little pinnacle that... like I say, it's kind of a graduation climb, as I remember, from the Arizona Mountaineering Club, which was formed. When was that formed? I don't
know. No idea.
Doug Black.
He was rescue, primarily.
Rescue, and he made some hardware. Doug Black, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right.
We're scattering things here, but I'm trying to bring times together on it. And then, you know, Rick and I and Jerry got together and went to Yosemite Valley and... in the lean years of 50 cents a day living, and when the real icons of rock climbing were there, the Yvon Chouinard, Royal Robbins, T.M. Herbert, Chuck Pratt, I remember Wayne Mary.
Mark Powell.
That's about it.
No, the other guy, that Warren Harding, he was one of the main. There were others too, a lot of others, but those were kind of when that whole genre started. It started before that, and one of the men I'm just remembering from things that I, you know, pulling up from somewhere back.
Well, yeah. Alan Steck was an early one.
Alan Steck.
He was a good. I knew him pretty well. He ran the mountaineering store.
Those are names I remember, and. I remember...
not in Oakland, but in Berkeley.
John Salathe, who was an icon from Europe. I think he's a Swiss guy.
How do you spell his last name?
Salathe, John Salathe.
Thank you.
The Salathe Wall on El Capitan was named after in his honor. And that was kind of, I call it the Golden Age.
It was the Golden Age of rock climbing.
And we were part of that, or I feel, in a kind of a small way. When, in those good days at Camp 4. I forget exactly, it was Rick that brought up the Grand Canyon thing and Zoroaster Temple, and I remember Jerry and I. Look, did we go together to recon it? We did. And who was the other guy with us? Remember, there was another guy with us. I'll think of his name. I know it'll come. We went up to find a route to the... Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I'm just... I kind of want to come back around to Jerry for a minute.
Good.
Let's get Jerry up to this speed, too, because I kind of want to know how you all three guys met. I think I'm kind of figuring that out. How did you get into life behind a rope?
Rick and I were best buddies in senior year of high school, maybe before that. And then Rick went off up to Menlo JC and the Stanford Alpine Club, and he brought it back to Phoenix and to me. Prior to him going there, one of our adventures was to climb Four Peaks, which we did while we were still in high school. And then that first winter that you were home for Christmas, we climbed San Francisco Peaks, a winter ascent, and froze our butts off.
To be there on the top on January 1st, which
wow.
Which we did, yeah. It was an interesting adventure.
Was Four Peaks a rope climb?
No.
No,
not at all.
Okay.
a backpack in, camping at the foot of the northern peak. We managed to start a little forest fire there inadvertently, one of the guys did.
That Thompson Peak in the Northman?
That North Peak, I don't know the name.
And Jerry, you grew up in Williams.
No.
No, your mother did.
I'm a native of Phoenix.
Of Phoenix?
As was my dad.
Okay.
My mom was born in Williams, so I'm a native back.
What did your father do?
Printing and lithographing.
Okay. In the valley there?
In the valley, Phoenix. Phoenix, Arizona, Engraving and Lithographing Company was my dad's business.
Okay.
He inherited basically from his dad, who started the business.
So then Rick shows up with a new skill, climbing.
Right.
And said, let's go climb.
He got me started, yep.
And how did you meet Dave?
I actually knew Dave from Boy Scout days. We both went to the National Jamboree in Valley Forge, Pennsylvania in 1950. Dave was one of the other Boy Scouts there that attended. So we knew each other from then. We're both all three of us are North Phoenix High School graduates of 1955.
Same class.
Same class, but
okay.
We didn't interface with Dave then. And it wasn't until college when...
When I called you and we started climbing.
Right.
Like a year later or 2 years later, 57?
That had been within the year.
Yeah.
Our high school graduation.
Right.
So then I've got a question back for Rick. When I think of Grand Canyon Rock and I think of Yosemite Rock, there's a difference.
Yeah, apples and oranges.
Thank you. What did you think about that at the time? Did you even think about it? It was just like, hey, I want to climb here, let's go.
No, well, for me, I was very comfortable on granite. They have a story about being uncomfortable on granite. And sandstone.
Well, wait, let's stop right there. What's that story?
Well, our first experience, Dave and mine. And
this is on New Year's Eve and New Year's Day.
What year?
Was it
56? It had to be.
57.
It'd be...
55 is when we graduated, our first year in college.
Because we did Humphreys the first year, so we must have done
57.
That the second year, yeah.
Okay,
56, 57?
Anyway, Dave and I joined Rick Christmas time. Rick was home to Phoenix for Christmas, and we thought, let's go to Yosemite on his way back to San Francisco to go back to college. So Dave and I joined him in Yosemite. The first climb we did was the Lower Cathedral Rock. And it was Dave and I's first experience at an exposed situation where we're on the edge and we're looking down there, and it's a long ways down there.
On very slick, polished rock. This was the overhang bypass on Lower Cathedral Rock is what it was, official climb. And I was in mountaineering boots. I'm not interrupting Jerry. And it was just very freaky. I froze in the middle of a pitch and I couldn't move because it was fear.
And we were totally unfamiliar.
Something like that.
High angle friction.
Right.
And were you roped in? Were you roped up?
We roped,
yeah. Okay.
Rick was our famous leader.
He was our leader.
And Rick, you were comfortable. You were cruising.
He was a bona fide leader for the Stanford Alpine Club at that point. He was taking on us two neophytes.
I don't know if that scared you, Jerry. Like,
oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. I have the photographic evidence. Stuck on the traverse.
Yeah.
The friction traverse. With drop off of 800 feet, probably, or 1,000 foot.
Well, it took us so long to get up across these two areas. There was an open book chimney, which was about a 45 degree angle up, and you took a special technique to be able to climb up that chimney. You couldn't just stand on the faces because you... No purchase. But anyway, with that and this traverse, we were so long on that darn thing that we had to bivouac on Lower Cathedral Rock. And if my memory serves, our project took us 27 hours before we got off of there.
And it's a two and a half hour climb.
Well, let me tell you.
We hold the record for the longest climb, probably.
And maybe John Harlan and I went back there several years later. And John said we did it in 45 minutes.
And we sat on the ledge. Little ledges are three butts could sit on. That was all the larger the ledge was. In our t-shirts at 16, 17 degrees in the valley that night. Froze our butts off. We were stuck on that ledge.
I was tied to a tree, I remember.
Probably.
Close to
16 hours.
Didn't we have a little fire there?
I'm trying to remember. We might have. Did we? I'm trying to remember. I don't know how we survived that one.
But in our imagination, we had a fire.
Maybe. Well, maybe. I remember being tied into the tree.
Yeah.
Afraid that I was going to fall off the thing. So I tied myself into a tree.
So we had one pitch to complete, which we did the next morning.
I think at that time Rick may not bring it up, but he was thinking about who have I got here.
And we checked back in the ranger station the next morning, and they didn't seem concerned. So that was the interesting part. Of course, in the middle of winter, nobody else was in Yosemite Valley climbing either.
I remember sleeping 13 hours that next day we got down.
Day. We crawled in our sleeping bags when we got down, and we slept and slept and slept. Daytime. Zarico, anyway.
So that was the introduction to granite.
Did you, after that climb, were you like, okay, we get it? Or was it like, I don't want to have anything to do with this again?
Oh, no. Not that at all.
We did a higher Cathedral Spire, right?
Yeah.
We tried lower Cathedral Spire and didn't make it. I remember that. I remember rappelling off
higher.
The lower Cathedral rock and coming to the end of the rope and having to swing in to a ledge. Didn't reach all the way.
Lower Cathedral rock.
We tried.
Was that on our trip, on our trip?
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
No?
You're manufacturing, Dave.
No, well, no. Maybe I did it with somebody else, but I remember we tried that. I couldn't make it.
We only did lower Cathedral.
Higher
Cathedral
rock.
Once.
And then higher
Spire. But Higher Spire had its
challenge.
Aspects.
Oh yeah, that very first pitch on there, another huge way down there exposure thing, and we had trouble getting over that very first little place.
But
eventually got to the top of it later in the day, and I was to be the last one down on the rappel, and the damn rope hung up, and I had to go back onto the top and unhang it. I had been going so slowly up that thing, you know, very, very cautious and troubled. But when that rope hung up, I went back up to the top of that mountain so quick, you wouldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it.
I remember that now. Isn't it funny? Yeah. I've forgotten all about that, and then he's jogging something back here.
I had a little prior history on Higher Cathedral Spire, because the year before, I got off route, doing it for the first time, and got off route. Had one piton in, it prevented a 160-foot fall, because I did take a fall, my only leader fall ever, and caught an ankle on the way down, so I ended up wearing a brace for the next year on the ankle while it healed and so forth. And I climbed the Monk with the brace on, because it was only 2 months later, because I was on crutches. That was the year before. So it was nice returning to Higher Cathedral Spire, completing that.
You were talking about, if I may, we were talking about Yosemite granite and the sandstone, and I remember after climbing in the valley and then getting on that sandstone, it was like night and day. I mean, sandstone, you could actually stick on it, you know, and I think that's what encouraged me. And maybe you too, to do some of the stuff on Zoroaster because we've been to Yosemite.
Well, right. It seemed like not a big deal at the time. But I have a question. Did we do Royal Archers together?
I did Royal Archers, I remember, twice.
Okay.
So
I was on Royal Archers with you, but I don't remember doing it twice.
I did it with somebody else, I remember.
Oh, okay. Just curious.
The old log, whatever they called it.
Remember? Yeah. The log was still there, the tree. Yeah.
And a lot of ashes from stuff, debris that they would light fires at the top of Royal Arches every evening and throw these.
Now that was Glacier Point.
Glacier, you're right.
Not Royal Arches.
Glacier Point. Yeah.
Oh well.
They did that at Yosemite Falls too, didn't they, at one time?
No.
They threw fire over there.
Mm-hmm. That was always back in the 40s and 50s off of Glacier Point, 4,000 feet.
Hmm. Impressive.
Because I was there as a kid. Saw it more than once, yeah.
So you were working on granite, Did you guys start climbing then in the valley, start working the valley rock?
Well, of course, we were climbing around Phoenix area, Camelback, and that's rotten granite and Squaw Peak. I don't know what kind of rock it is, but totally different.
Yeah, metamorphosed crud.
Yeah, but a lot of cracks and ledges and stuff, so not a friction kind of deal like we were confronted with in Yosemite.
Yeah, we were doing different pinnacles. We ended up doing Baba Keevery in southern Colorado, established the first climbing route on it.
Arizona. So southern Arizona.
Or Arizona, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And then we also, there was a needle above Tucson. We went up, ended up doing a second ascent. We did Pinnacle Peak, you and I.
Pinnacle Peak.
And you're lucky to be here today.
Yeah, that's one I almost ate it on.
The repel anchor came out, and you landed on a little ledge about 10 feet down. Managed to
stay on
the ledge.
That's number two.
And we made we made a second ascent of that, too, Pinnacle Peak. That was a granulated.
Do you remember, were you with us when we went out to do Tom's Thumb? Remember?
Oh, yeah. It wasn't Tom's Thumb. That was the Dork.
Oh, the Dork. We called it the Dork.
But now they call it Tom's Thumb.
Where is this?
On McDowell Mountain.
McDowell Mountain's on the north end, toward the north end of it.
Okay.
And we found a group of Boy Scouts that climbed it. Remember?
I don't remember that.
Yeah.
So Baba Keevery, you're climbing the Catalinas, it sounds like.
Yeah. How did the Baba Keevery thing come about, anyway? We just, you know, last...
I think what I remember, because I've been to Baba Keevery and went up the usual route, I've been there for 100 years and so forth. I think one day I decided, well, I'll just put up a new route and take the weakest view of that, what that might be. And it was like a 5-6 in terms of technical difficulty. But it was fun. We had 6 people on that ride.
Yeah, that was a neat climb.
And Jerry got left off the credits, right?
Yeah.
And some woman got put on it. I don't know who that was.
But yeah.
We didn't have a woman with us at that time.
Can't remember her name right now, but she was...
Is that Joanna McComb?
Yes, McComb, Joanna.
Okay. Did you guys present at the Granitica they just had for Baba Keevery?
Yeah,
they did.
We did.
Okay, all right.
He didn't make it down.
Okay, all right. Okay, so you guys are starting to climb. You're really working the granites.
I'm more in the granite. We were in Pinnacles National Monument climbing, which is a very, I don't know what, it's a conglomerate of some kind, just a lot of pieces of granite compressed together, and all fingertip stuff. And then a lot of practice climbing areas all around the Bay Area.
Oh.
We went to.
While you guys are climbing in the valley.
So
you're all still working on your climbing skills, and you haven't really geared into Grand Canyon yet. Is that a correct picture?
Well, we're back up. In the summer of 1956, John Harlan and I, with another couple, went for 3 weeks to Canada to do some climbing, invited Jerry to join us in part of that, so he came up and joined us, and we did snowpatch.
Yeah, you did snowpatch. First thing was Mount Sir Donald.
Mount Sir Donald we did, and we did several other mountains. We did 3 in one day, I remember, 19-hour.
Victoria was one, and
Victoria,
one above Lake Louise. And while you guys did snowpatch, I did Pigeon Spire, and lost my billfold in the process. So here I was way up in Canada with no identification, no money, no billfold.
Those are the stories we have.
How did you sort that one out?
Those two guys. Well, actually, John and Rick. John.
Because part of it, too, for all of us, was, for me, the climb was really on holidays and vacation times and being in college, same with Jerry. And he may have done more in the Phoenix area, probably. I don't remember.
Not a whole lot. No, my climbing was basically with you guys. I didn't really know anybody else in Phoenix today.
Yeah.
I missed you.
And then Dave and I decided, I dropped out of school, decided, well, I'll back up a minute.
Remember Long's Peak, too.
Oh, that's right.
Peak.
Tried to do a winter ascent of Alexander's Chimney. Got in a blizzard. Had to dig a trench just to pee because the wind was howling so cold. In fact, I got frostbite on that on the feet. They were swollen up. took the...
And then me and Don Morris, we didn't go. These were the two experienced guys, and Don Morris and I. We were going to try, were we going to try and do the regular route on it, Don and I? I can't remember. I remember being in that cold tent and skis. We had skis.
Oh, yeah, across, yeah.
Well, they were skins. The skis were military-type skis, and we had taken ropes and wrapped them around the skis so that we could walk on, climb up on the snow.
We didn't have skins on that? We had skins on Humphreys.
Did we?
Yeah.
Well, one time I remember we had ropes.
Because it was my first time on skis, let alone having skins. Because I remember coming down was crash and bang, boom, with all the packs and all of our equipment and stuff. Going up was okay. Coming down.
That was on San Francisco Peaks. This is the only place I've ever gotten frostbitten.
Ah.
Not our trip, but later with John Harlan.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was training in Phoenix. He was a fighter pilot, and he was training on the F-100 at Luke Air Force Base, and we did a lot of stuff together while he was here. But one of the things we did was Humphreys. We didn't go all the way to the top. We went to Agassiz. But at any rate, when we got up on Agassiz from the Snowball Lodge, on that side, the wind was blowing pretty good on our backs going up. So we went over to the other side and fooled around. I got some pictures of John with his ice axe and doing stuff. We turned around and faced the wind coming back down toward the lodge, and the wind was blasting, and my gloves weren't on, and whatever. I got frostbitten on the nose and cheeks and fingertips.
Wow.
First and only time.
So, I'm sorry, it's not John Harlan, but it's Tom Harlan.
No.
In Phoenix, in Tucson, actually, that I was thinking about.
Okay.
Okay, sorry about that.
John's totally
different. But to get different to how we got the Zoroastrians, let me try to introduce that.
Please.
In 57, I went off to Peru, an expedition for 2.5 months, and came back and was transferred to the University of Arizona in February of 57. Then I went off to Peru. And then so we all continued climbing. And I was in summer school in 58. And Dave and I decided we'd go on another adventure. I wanted to return to Peru. I said, well, let's hitchhike through Mexico, Central, and South America and get back to Peru, because I want to get back to climbing. Dave did too. So I dropped out of school. And in doing that, we said, well, we've got some time. I said something about, let's do Zoroastrians, because Jerry and Dave, the year before, went down the South Rim, Fanta Ranch, and back up to all the walls to get to the base of Zoroaster, because we obviously had conversations about it earlier.
We're just looking for a route to the base of it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they kind of set up the agenda for us to look at climbing Zoroasters.
And just to be clear, that was 1956. You were basically doing the scouting.
Wasn't it?
That would have been 57.
It would be 57. 57 to climb it. Yeah. 58. September 58.
58.
The guy that went with us was Dick Ernst.
Dick Ernst, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay. Good, right. Got the name.
He never really got into it. He was just sort of a kid that happened to be there and wanted to go with us.
The spelling of his last name?
E-R-N-S-T,
I think. Ernst?
E-R-N-E-S-T.
And E-S-T?
Ernst or Ernst?
I think so. Yeah.
Thank you.
But that's the only contact I remember we had with him, was it? Or did
I think we did some climbing on Pinnacle Peak with him different times. But
so before we started to hitchhike to Mexico, we thought, well, let's see if we can't first ascend the Zoroastrians. So the three of us wanted to do that, but it was unfortunate. You might want to embellish that story. Dave and I wanted to go, and we wanted to go, and Jerry wanted to go. But Jerry had a problem that prevented him from going.
Well, I had to get registered for my last year of college. If I wanted to continue my college to get my commission in the Air Force ROTC program. So I was unable to go because I had to be in Tempe to register. So then they took it and went and did it. Ouch. But what do you do? I went off to be a military pilot and an airline pilot and through a career and all that because of that avenue that I took.
And what do you think, looking back on that? Are you, I mean, Did you wish you'd gone with those guys?
Well, considering the overall outlook and how everything turned out, I mean, it was nice that they went ahead and did it and I wasn't there, but I thought I'd take the route that I took.
Mm. Nice. Jerry and Ed did the third ascent, you know, to do nice. That. So it was kind of like, you know.
You weren't left out too far.
No.
I came back a year later and brought five other people from Colorado College, which I'd transferred to from the University of Arizona. We did the first winter ascent in February. And on both of our ascents, the first and the second, we bivouac. For various reasons. And some funny things on the first ascent, we got partway up the climb on a nice shelf, big shelf. And I woke up the next morning and he was gone.
Take nice out of that description.
What did I say?
No, it was a nice shelf.
Oh, it was a nice shelf. It's beautiful. I mean, it's just a flat tabletop shelf. And we didn't bother to tie in because there was plenty of room. But he was gone when I woke up next morning.
Oh, no.
And he fell into the crack between the shelf and the face going up, which was our first overhanging. 110-foot overhanging repel. He was gone. He was sound asleep in this crack.
I woke up. I think I took a sleeping pill. I'm trying to remember. So,
well, we were tired because
we were
dehydrated. I lost 15 pounds in 6 days.
Wow.
It was extreme heat. And we took a...
September what?
A big 5-gallon can to collect water because it had been raining up to the day we... got on. It started raining again the day we got off, 6 days later. So we couldn't collect water, so we were eating and sucking, you know, rub-filled little potholes for water. We only took 2 gallons with us. A quart each.
We left.
It's crazy.
Remember, we dropped some off. We're looking for a route on the temple. We had really discovered one on our recon when Jerry and I and Dick Harris went. So we found that back on the southwest corner and dropped some water, some gear, remember, then went back.
Yeah, we went to that one immediately. That looked like a potential route.
Then went back to our base camp a little bit lower.
Then we decided the next day to take the whole day to circumnavigate the whole perimeter all the way around to see if there was a better route to get started.
We were waiting for the rainfall. It was a 5-gallon jerry can that we took to the top.
On a big target to collect rain.
And it never rained. So it was decision time. You know, do we bail off this thing or go for it? And we did. And I remember the very first pitch of the climb, the very bottom of it, there was a tree down here with a pink rattlesnake in it. That's yep. You remember that?
It's a Grand Canyon rattlesnake. He was there when we started, and he was there when we finished.
Is that right?
That move.
Fun to see if we climbed. But the story on the ledge was I remember having some horrific nightmares, and I woke up. I think I took something, you know, aspirin or something. I remember. We could only take a few swallows of water. And I woke up and I was delirious. I didn't know where I was, I remember that. And I somehow I got off that ledge down into the crack, and I don't remember exactly how, but I didn't know where I was. So then I went back to sleep, thank God. I'd still be there probably. That's number 3 in the list. And so Rick woke me up the next morning. And then from that spot, we went out around, remember the little traverse into the chimney? Mm-hmm. It goes up to the ledge that you led the last difficult pitch.
Well, we had 2 significant leads before that. They were long, almost full rope lengths, 120 foot, 2 diagonal leads on very high angle, probably 75 degrees, no handholds, all friction, toe friction. Very delicate, and
but
no protection.
But had these little pockets on it, though.
And that was in the first part of the climb.
It was all downward, but total exposure and no protection.
Well, there was a little cactus.
There's a little cactus in the middle of the thing.
You remember that?
See, we had those 120...
Have you done Zoroastrians?
I have not climbed Zoroastrians.
Oh, okay.
No.
We had those 120-foot nylon ropes. Mm-hmm. So after, and of course, you know, no sneaking harnesses in those days. We just tied the rope around our waist. You know? And so that reduced the rope length to climb with quite a bit. What did we figure? About 80 feet, actually. I remember we could do like 80-foot leads.
And well, we had a 120-foot rope.
Yeah, but we tied into it.
Well, we would have had at least 100 loop, foot.
Maybe 100 feet.
Yeah, 110, probably.
Anyway, I remember the leads were... It's like... First of all, the protection we had at that time, well, there were some army angles, then I remember I had some stubis and some things from Europe.
And we had some bolts.
Some malleable things that in those days they not put pitons in, they left them in.
Right.
I remember if you did that, you know, you could run out pretty easily. So I remember the leads were short, but I think a lot of the times we took leads without putting protection in because they were short.
We put in bolts for belay protection.
Yeah,
but not for climbing.
Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, I remember. Did you think at that time? I thought that bolting was not climbing. I thought it was artificial climbing. I thought it was.
Well, for a belay, it's not
belay. I'm talking about the actual climbing. Sure.
Well, it's like on LCAP, Harding put in 300 bolts.
Yeah,
but and they were hanging on them.
Well, yeah, that was for climbing.
But I remember thinking.
Didn't use anything.
Yeah. Those were such early days, and I remember thinking that's not climbing for whatever that was for. So if you couldn't do it without that, that wasn't fair. No, not fair, but you really weren't climbing. That's what I thought in those days anyway.
Different. Yeah. So after Zoroaster, then what happened? Because you're looking about going down to Peru.
Well, I'd already been to Peru.
No, for
a second time. Yeah. Yeah. But one other thing on Zoroaster is... We did some thing. We built a 6-foot cairn so the rangers could see with their telescope that it actually been sent to prove that we were there. So.
6 foot? It took you a while to build that.
No.
Mm-hmm.
There's plenty of rocks on top.
I have a black hole. Well, coming down, I remember we were in such an ozone, dehydrated ozone coming back. I remember staggering along to get to the break of the red wall and being fuzzy focused going there, that first stage is one of the first stages of dehydration. I mean, we were wasted. I don't know if you remember that. And we're getting, I don't know how we got down to the Red Bull.
We were grateful to get back to Phantom Ranch and get water.
Yeah. I have a picture. It rained. When we got down to the base of the Red Wall, it rained, and I have a picture of the first water pocket we hit. You have a picture covered in that, don't you? Yeah. Black and white picture of Rick sticking his face down. It looked like a skeleton sticking his face down in the water.
That's the problem.
Maybe you have that. Is that in there?
Yeah. No problem.
And I remember we had fruit cocktail. We bought some fruit cocktail at the ranch.
We had a chicken dinner, actually.
What was the fruit cocktail?
Yeah, here's the one he was talking about.
And you're face down in a pot.
That's
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Face down.
This is another one.
Oh, yeah, that's on the way in. Do you have the one of me, the back of me going across the little traverse?
I do on a 3D slide.
That's what it is. I think I might have a copy
of it. Not here.
Rick, is this from the proceedings?
No.
Or
this is Dave's article in Summit Magazine documenting the first ascent.
Summit Magazine, do you know the year volume? Is that written down?
I have lost that magazine and it's not here.
I have a copy of it.
Dave probably has it.
Okay. Just curious. All right.
But it would be the next year, probably springtime, 1959. This is a 1959 timetable that was produced in Summit Magazine.
Okay.
Jerry and I, and what was his name? What was the other guy?
You mean Pomeroy?
Gene Pomeroy.
Yeah. On our third ascent, we had another individual with us. His name Gene Pomeroy. He was not a climber. He was a weightlifter. He was a very husky guy. But the endeavor to get as far as he got up there was pretty good for him because he really was not a hiker even. But anyway, Gene was our backup guy.
On your third ascent?
Yeah.
Did he make the climb?
No.
Oh.
Now, where did he stop?
No intention.
Where did he stop?
So then you came back, Rick, to do the second ascent?
Yes.
Is that right?
I brought five other people with me.
In the winter?
In the winter, in February. And we brought also a few people who were hiking in the canyon. So they all came down to Phantom Ranch with us. And we went on and climbed up to Zoroaster's. And that was pretty interesting. There's I do have an article on that. It was written by one of the people who was on that ascent.
Oh, wonderful.
How did you get all those people up there?
Well, that's pretty interesting. Because I had another person who I felt was reasonably qualified because he climbed in the Garden of the Gods, which is sandstone, so he's familiar with that. Although this real hard Coconino sandstone, which is beautiful to climb on. Garden of Gods is more rotten. But he bailed out on those two leads to lead it, so we ended up having a rope of six. That's another reason why we ended up bivouacking. And all five of them had a slip on that climb. And particularly on the north side of it was all ice. Where we, you know, the traverse?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I remember one of them fell out of the chimney. Yanked his blayer off the ledge where we had a boat bolt for a tie-in to the first ascent. It was a comedy of errors. And then to make the last pitch, which was ice, my blayer was standing on a very small ledge, and I had to get up on his shoulders, standing up, with looking down at the big drop. And he commented here when I found the article last year, whenever it was in the Trail and Timberline Colorado Mountain publication, the record of the ascent. And he said, that's the most, some ridiculous or incredible lead that he had seen, but I got high enough to get in a boat. I had to do sixth class,
Direct aid.
Yeah, direct aid for that to get up there. But anyhow, we did make the climb, and we also bivouacked, and we did build a fire.
Where did you bivouac?
On the summit.
On the summit.
Yeah, on the summit. We're just right under the summit.
Yeah, below the Kaibab.
Yeah, did a lot of shivering that night. Mm-hmm. Six of us.
I bet. Did you bring any gear?
Oh,
to bivouac?
Yeah, we were. Well, no. Yeah, we had gear.
Okay.
Enough. We didn't freeze to death. It was just really uncomfortable. That was all.
Yeah.
And the first rappel off of Zoroaster is a beautiful 110-foot overhanging free rappel. A real ass burner, because in those days,
no
the rope was...
Yeah. The fur method.
Shoulders and butts. And
padding.
Yeah.
I still have a scar back here.
Did you get a scar on that?
No. Rappelling off the monk. In shorts.
And shorts. Oh, I didn't.
Shorts and work boots.
Yeah.
And it slipped off my pants. And in the middle of rappel, you got to keep going, right?
That was an overhang. That was another one.
Yeah, I remember just inching it down and screaming. And
introduction to climbing.
You know, when we did the third ascent, I don't think we were aware of the fact that Rick had been up there.
No,
I wasn't.
You were shocked.
Yeah.
We first discovered there was a footprint in the dried mud on the route to the base. Somebody's been here since we were.
Well, there were somebody had been up there even before. I don't know if you were with it. You and I and Dick Ernst discovered a piton in one of the layers on the way up.
Really?
To the base. It was in the red wall. It was
that.
A piton in the red wall.
I remember a piton on Sinyala.
Now, there was one in the red wall. I think some earlier people had been up on that plateau where Zoroaster and Brahma and Deva, that's where all the three are on the top of what the layer is there. And I think some of those early climbers had been up there.
Hmm.
Maybe. Because I remember finding it. I wish I still had it. I said, what the heck?
Yeah, well.
But maybe that's as far as I got it.
And the interesting thing to me was, that what's the other climb we didn't consider because we were so dehydrated, right next to Zoroaster's on the same plateau, and it wouldn't climb until 10 years later.
Brahma?
No, it's...
Next to Zoroaster.
Is that Angel's
Gate? No, it's a much larger thing, but not a technical climb.
Well, Brahma is between Zoroaster and the rim. There's Zoroaster, Brahma, then Deva.
Not Brahma.
Buddha temple, that's on the other side of the creek.
We've lost our minds. What can I say?
We're in the map. Sorry. So with that success, then
Now you're getting ready to go flying. So at what point did you say goodbye to Grand Canyon, I've got to go flying, or did you keep coming back to keep climbing?
Well, when I started flying, it was with Bonanza Airlines, and we had route from Las Vegas to Grand Canyon Airport, and that's when I discovered Mount Sinala. We're flying, yes, flying over Havasupai and looking down, oh, look, that's pretty interesting. So then we started investigating Sinala, and Dave and I and his wife and my wife and your brother, we made our first attempt on it. That was springtime. Anyway, we carried a hoe home.
What year was this?
We were a big expedition. I had one kid in the backpack Mary was carrying, and she was pregnant with my second kid, and we went down and camped at Supai Campground.
Is that how you were going to try to get carbonate or somehow get up onto the Esplanade?
Right. Well, we...
Had you scoped it out from the plane?
Yes, only from the air.
We went up Carbonate Canyon part way and then...
decided this isn't going to work.
Well, I remember the rattlesnakes.
Well, there were snakes, but there was no obvious route to get up there.
And that stopped us the first time. Never even got up onto the plateau. And we went back again a second time in the...
Winter time
because... because there was water, it was snow melt, and the water pockets up there on the plateau, so we didn't have to carry as much.
And it was beautiful.
Oh, gorgeous.
Plenty of water.
Gorgeous.
Temperature's good. We got most of the way up the climb, and oops.
It was snow on the north side of the damn thing. And I remember getting up there in clutter shoes and starting to slip. And
we weren't ready for that.
We were just, you know... that far from the top, I had to bail. I got scared and bailed out.
So we trucked back out of there.
So we trucked back out. And, went back again.
And went back again.
Went back again.
What year were we talking about?
Well, let's see, 68 is when I hired with the airline, so it must have been 68 or 9.
Oh, so it was many years after Zorro.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
well,
wow.
That was a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Mount Sinala, 1958. Was UCL Climbers, and then it says Gansey. Would you have been there in 58?
No, that's
when that's
we did an interview at the moment.
That was later.
Yeah, it's not
Gansey and Tudrick, or Gansey and Robertson.
Okay, sorry.
Let me see if I can find
it. I've got it.
Dave wrote up a nice article that was in Arizona Days and Ways, so that'd tell us. All I have to do is go dig it out of a box that I'm storing it in.
Wow, in the 68.
129.68 is my day to hire with the airline.
Wow. 10 years later.
Remember that one, huh?
Yeah, seniority.
Yeah.
The lifeblood of an airline pilot.
How many years were you actually an airline pilot then, total? Yeah, 68, well, gosh.
Well, I last flew with them in 94.
Well, that's a long time.
Retired in 97, actually.
Yeah, well, that's a long time. But you had some off time in between there, did you, between airlines?
Yeah, two different times I had furlough time. Yeah. And that's when I went to work for Camp Trails. And you were working for High Adventure Headquarters.
Right. But you still work, didn't you work? Were you also flying?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I was working part-time and full-time, being furloughed and back full-time.
So what I've got is the first ascent of the North Face, Monday, April 11th, 1960, 5:30 p.m., Don Myers, M-E-Y-E-R-S, Mike Sherrick, S-H-E-R-R-I-C-K, Jim Wilkerson, W-I-L-K-E-R-S-O-N, Bill Amburn, A-M-B-U-R-N, UCLA Mountaineers.
Mike Sherrick, I remember a couple of those names somehow I associate with Yosemite.
Could very well be.
Second ascent by Dave Gansey and Jerry Robertson, May 3rd, 1969. North Face route up this wasp nest has only mud route we've ever climbed. Found carabiner and sling from 1960, ascent the U.S. Army carabiner at that. Beautiful climbing weather with a high of 80 and low of 40s. Tremendous view, a panorama of the Grand Canyon that evokes the feeling of timelessness and desolation.
I assume that was what was written in the log at the top. Man of many joyful words.
So that was then May 3rd, 1969. So you started working for Bonanza in 68.
I began in 129-68. And it was 69 when I discovered that, hey, that's really looking down there.
And it took you one trip down to scout it out.
Just to try to find the base of it.
And then how did you eventually find the route to the base? I'm sorry, I ran away. Run that story past me again.
Second time we went down, we got up on the plateau.
How did you get on the plateau?
Right there at the Supai village was the way to get up on it.
Oh. Yeah, there was a trail up there.
Yeah.
Okay. The Supais used, they had horses up there.
Huh. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And once we got up there, then we just do this zigzag thing.
Mm-hmm. Just walk around on the Supai?
As you know, you've been there.
And I've got a good picture, more than one good picture, a hellacious looking thing to climb at that time from most angles, but the north side happened to have a break in it.
Had you seen that from the air? Did you realize that there was a route on the east and then wrap around off around the north side, or did you just said, okay, well,
we'll go there and check it out and climb it.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. So you started just walking around it.
It seems like we never went around it much.
We didn't go around the whole thing. We just found that route. We went around.
Okay.
But you know, from my vantage point in those days, the climb was one thing, but the whole thing was the adventure. I mean, you know, you don't just drive up to the base of the wall and climb. Just getting there and the whole aspect of that, to me, was, Zoroaster was, a unique thing in itself.
Well, that's what prevented a lot of the climbs from being done earlier on, because people wanted to be able to drive their car to the base of it and climb, and those things you didn't.
There's a whole hump, especially for water and things, to get to them. Now, I don't know now the climbers, I don't know if it's conditioning or gear or what, they seem to be so much faster.
Well, like when John Harlan III went in there and from the South Rim up and all the way back to South Rim in 24 hours.
Yeah. So, and you wonder, I wonder about...
That was the Outside Magazine.
And you wonder about that and think, what could we have done that then with the same gear and training? Train for this. It's a big thing now. It's a sport people train for. They never trained for anything. We had limited gear, I guess you could say, but a lot of it, I think, was in our heads, in your head. It's never been done before, therefore it's going to be difficult. I don't know. But then I look at some of the things they do today, and I wonder, wow, are they on speed, or what are they? Are they just that far advanced in their
condition? Mindset is so different. Yeah. Like the north face of the Eiger, the famous Killer Mountain, it's been done in, the last I heard, 2 hours and 47 minutes.
Just free climbing, right, the whole thing with it?
Free climbing, yeah, solo. I mean, he's just running up that thing.
And the same nose, the original route took 42 days on El Cap, just over 2 hours, free, no direct aid.
Yeah. Well, so some of this is these people are going on your shoulders, meaning they've got the route descriptions, they've got very good gear. They don't have to think about, let's go figure out the route first time. Right. Okay, second time.
They don't have the logistical problems.
They don't have the logistical problems. That's all done. And they have maybe better gear. So they can come in on that highway run that.
That's the evolution.
And they know it's been done 100 times before.
Yeah.
So.
But the 50s was really the golden age for climbing.
Did you keep climbing in Grand Canyon then after? Because it sounds like there was a big gap for you guys.
Ended up going to Lincoln Park Zoo in Chicago. Well, after I graduated from college and getting in the zoo business.
I went back at different times through to do things.
In the 50s or into the 60s?
No,
early
60s.
Later on. Yeah.
Different times.
Okay.
And with different people, Angel's Gate. And actually, climbed Zoroaster Temple two more times, one by the right standard route, one by the southeast face.
Okay.
In that record right there, there's no mention of John and Reno being involved in any of the climbs there.
The southwest face, yeah. Eli.
I know, but it's not in that book there. Really?
Oh, well, that, his new ascent.
That was our first ascent.
Was not in this book, right, at all, was it?
No. It wasn't, but I mean, any of the climbs, and you guys... What's the name of those pinnacles off to the east? Snoopy.
Oh, Angel's Gate.
Well, I mean, he was involved a lot, but I never see anything about him there. Anyway.
And then went back to Climbing Mountain with Steve Williams and Dan Bingham. That's when I was at High Adventure. That was another bivouac thing, winter bivouac thing. And then, let's see. Well, actually I made a first ascent of the east face of Brahma Temple, the solo ascent, was fourth class climb. George Bain came up the other way, and we did Mencius and Confucius Temple. And these are just kind of spaced out. I was never really, quote, a serious climber or whatever. Now climbing is serious, you know, it can be very serious.
Well, I think of Yosemite Valley, and I think of people out there, you know, it's Camp 4, isn't it? Or,
yeah.
So, I mean, it's actually, there is a location, and we climb here for weeks at a time, and the people come up from San Francisco every weekend to climb.
Oh, yeah.
It seems like that really wasn't happening in Grand Canyon in the 50s and 60s.
Not at all. I don't know that it has ever gotten to that level of interest.
It has individually, I think, the Tomasi brothers and people in the 90s, the Gore-Tex brothers that were out here on weekends. Harvey, of course, I think was the first sort of weekend. I'm there every weekend, but he was basically all alone. I mean, a different hiking partner.
Tolan, the fellow who wrote the book on backpacking.
Fletcher.
But he was in, he was out, and he was gone. I mean, it wasn't like he was...
Well, I thought he spent more time here.
No. He came back. He did some more. He did some more hiking. He went from Supai out to Diamond, and he did some more. But just that concept that we might have today of, you know, I'm going out to the end of Camel. I'm going climbing. In where the Tucson people would climb in the 70s, when I kind of got into it. I'm going up to Windy Point. I mean, it's every weekend sort of deal. I get a sense that in Grand Canyon in the 50s into the 60s, the UCLA Climbing Club would show up and do a climb
and
be gone.
Yeah, because we started the technical climbing, as far as I know, in the canyon. And it was a 10-year drought before there's any more technical climbing, at least 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'd say Merle Club was out there with a giant hemp rope. There's some amazing pictures of him in the 50s.
Oh, I don't know who he is.
He's got his pith helmet out there with this amazing smile, and he's hanging off this rope going down some Coconino chute on his way to climb Vishnu Temple.
Yeah. So, those are crazy people.
Yeah, wow. And he was Harvey's.
I don't know about that.
He was Harvey's mentor. And I can look up his first ascent to Vishnu Temple, and then I think he went up Wutong.
That was what? That was 1937, the year we were born.
It might have been 47.
Or was it 47? I mean, I wonder what motivated him.
Hmm.
Yeah, some of those old God.
Because it's there.
Yeah.
Club, and who else was it? Club, and Richard, and a couple other guys. Who was the first Isis temple? Some who did Isis temple fairly early.
That's a good. I have never climbed Isis. I just see it would be.
I
don't see that here. I have to fire up my computer, but I've got it here because I know Olman's put that together. I know it's there. It's just blowing past me right now. But yeah, there were just odd people out there that weren't connecting, that didn't even know it. You'd get to the top of Sinyal and you'd say, "Who are these UCLA people?" Because people weren't quite connected.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, there wasn't a connection that I know of that I can think of. I don't think there is now. I mean,
well, that's what I don't know. I mean, I've heard a lot of the inner gorge walls, people have been climbing on those, but I have no knowledge.
I don't know either on that.
The evolution of technical climbing in Canyon in terms of recent years.
Well, there's more, I don't know how many routes there are on Zoroaster now, but probably.
But, you know, the climbing.
Oh, yeah, there's different routes. Isn't there, Arthur, Tom? Number of routes on Zoroaster Temple now all around it, isn't it? Kind of like
I don't know.
I think so. George Bain did a new route on it, I know.
Okay.
But even today, I don't think the level of climbing in the canyon is anything at all like it is in Yosemite.
No. It's still hard to get to.
It's hard to get to.
And logistics.
Right. Exactly right.
You got to carry
not,
water.
Not so much fun in those logistics.
Yeah, you got to carry that damn water.
Because we were actually in the golden age of adventure, of climbing. I think.
Yeah, that's a good description. Adventure. Adventure was getting there sometimes.
We didn't train for it. We had good skills, and we did great things.
And we were young.
For that time. Yeah, we were 20.
We were young.
I'm still trying to track down
Isis.
I missed you. Two attempts to get to Isis.
You tried to kill her, Dave.
Who?
No. 1945, Merle climbed Vishnu, northwest slope.
What year?
1945, on July 13th. Here's his route description. And I thought that he had been up there before that. I thought he had scoped that out with his son. There's a photograph on the club's... It's a long story. They lost all their photographs when they were moving. There was a fire in their moving van and burned a bunch of stuff. But they had a small best of family photos album on a seat, and they grabbed that and got it out. They have a photo Merle took of his son on top of Vishnu.
Huh.
I thought that was...
45.
Well, there it is. It's... July 13, 1945. So there were people out there doing stuff.
When did Bhutto start?
Is Vishnu a technical climber? I don't know. I've never been there. So.
It's a fifth class.
You've climbed Vishnu, haven't you?
Yeah. You got to poke around. You got to figure it out. It's just like Sinyalvi. Well, we're going to get up here. You got to work at it for a while to make it.
Okay.
So these guys were out there working it.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, this is, and that's why the photo of him with this giant hemp rope, and you're looking like, really? It was like anchor chain.
Well, my perspective on it is things really started in the 50s because Spider Rock went down, the totem pole went down, and Zoroaster went down. And those are three iconic pieces.
Shiprock was in there somewhere?
That was earlier.
Earlier.
In the 40s.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, Shiprock was earlier, but then the whole cast moved to Utah and all the sandstone pinnacles there.
Yeah, you saw that
by
in
then.
The 60s.
The Sierras were done. The last of the Sierra peaks had been done, so the climbers were moving inland then into the deserts.
Yeah.
Well, you saw the book Desert Towers by.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a great
yeah.
book. You have a copy of that?
You showed me, I think. You brought
Did I bring
it and showed it to me. Yeah.
God, great book that
yeah.
is.
Yeah.
The history of that is just unbelievable. It's always as a
time. I Leighton Corder.
Yeah.
And a lot of people. I did some first ascents with Leighton.
Did you?
Before.
What was he like to climb with?
He was like a giant spider. Long arms, long torso. I mean, I remember things that I took him on that probably made first ascents. And he had such a long reach, it was easy to get over that. And we did a nice climb. We did a winter ascent of the second buttress of Hallett's in the winter. It's actually recorded. There's a whole book on Corps' early climbs, and people talk about them and so forth. And a good friend of mine was the editor who put that book together to Space Mountain's name.
That's not the book that I've got, is it? Beyond Vertical or something?
Yeah, that's it.
It is, okay.
It is Beyond Vertical. But we did, it was the fifth ascent of that. It was the first winter ascent. And neither one of us might have been here. Cam Burns, I don't know if you know that name.
Ken Burns, or you know Ken Burns?
Oh, Ken Burns, yeah.
Cam.
Oh, no, Ken. I thought you were saying Ken.
No,
okay.
No, Cam Burns.
Cam, no, don't.
He's doing Layton's biography. And he's written a lot of stuff, mountaineering. He's keeps everybody, I just happen to be on his Facebook thing, so I get updates on what's going on. But he interviewed me several years ago about Leighton and this particular climb and other climbs we did. And I had shared with him, it was a 1,200 foot face, and it was like a day and a half the first ascent. We did it in 5 hours in the middle of winter, colder than hell. But about 1,000 foot up, there was an overhang, and Leighton fell off the overhang, had a great belay, but the anchor bolt I was in was the original anchor bolt, and it pulled out. But I never told Leighton that, and I told Cam, and I said, well, if that could come out, we'd be both down at the bottom, 1,000 foot down. So I said, well, I wouldn't have 9 children, and Leighton wouldn't have done all these things, wonderful things, in his career in climbing. So, and it was a good conversation, but yeah, I just think it was a great time for me. And again, for me, it was all during the college days and vacations and stuff. So I never continued that. I got involved with Outward Bound and in my late 30s, was chief instructor and course director for them, Colorado Outward Bound, at the Marble Camp. So I had a lot of fun.
And then you brought that in. You eventually you got into some river running.
Yeah, I did. I probably organized about 40 rafting trips with Hatch. So I designed my own trip, and all my ones in the Grand Canyon. I did a dozen of them. They were all 10-day trips, and most of them got out of lava. And so we stayed a lot in the inner gorge. We did a lot of the side canyons and so forth. And Queen, like, you've been on the canyon, and you know where the last one we did, Thunder River, where it comes out of the wall. We went in August and climbed in and went caving. Have you ever done that one in there? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We got stopped at the waterfall, the little 12-foot. Yeah. But, and we did Hermit and life jackets that year. But it was a fun time. We had a lot of great trips. We did a lot of on the Green and Yampa and Middle Fork of the Salmon Cataract.
Were you doing that with Colorado Mountain College?
No. I ran private trips.
Okay.
I just used Hatch as my outfitter.
Okay. So you would charter the trip?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
So I did that, and I did a lot of whitewater canoe trips, Lower Canyon, Rio Grande, with covered canoes and stuff. And we did several trips in the Paria Canyon, Buckskin Gulch, and those things. And that was primarily because my kids were growing up. They were young. They were 8, 10, 12. We were doing 14-years and all that stuff. So in the 70s, did a lot of rafting on the Arkansas.
Okay.
Yeah, remember going down the Arkansas in high water times. And got sucked off the back of the boat my first 3 trips because my paddlers didn't get me out of the hole. That's one of the great rivers, actually, to raft because you're constant. In high waters, yeah. Very much on it. So I spent from 69 to 78 a lot in the outdoors. Yeah, probably spent 3 years on the river. I think I calculated one time.
Before I forget, book I had mentioned to Jerry and Rick, maybe you heard of it, by Craig Childs. One of his latest ones, Apocalyptic Planet. Did you read that?
I've heard of it, yes.
I just got done.
Great.
Fantastic book. And one of the chapters is about them running a river in the Himalayas. And that first ascent of this god-awful river. And that description is just...
God-awful.
Oh, God. It makes me want to hold my breath, you know, when I read it. He's really a good writer. So you might enjoy that.
Yeah. So from Zoroaster to Sinyala, were there any other summits in between then? And then after Sinyala?
For me, finished airline career, and here I am.
Okay.
And actually, Sinyala, I think, was
no,
the last
time. I stopped climbing. The last time I climbed was 1962. I was guiding for the Iowa Mountaineers. They wanted me to go on further trips, going back to Peru and stuff like that. But I was involved in the zoo business, and the zoo profession and administrator, and had moved back to Colorado from... Marlon Perkins at the Lincoln Park Zoo in Chicago.
I got
several years, and then
what do you got? It's not red.
Came to Denver Zoo as assistant director to become director. I got politically really out of balance. My political intelligence was not intelligent enough.
This is at the Denver Zoo.
Politics. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I left the zoo business and went into other things. Also, eventually got into Outward Bound.
When did you leave Denver?
The zoo?
Yeah.
1966.
Okay. Chuck Warren has been very instrumental in the zoo, but I think he's much newer.
Or Clayton Freiheit was the one who came in after me about 5 years later, and he's the one who really developed Yazirut to his present.
Okay.
He was a friend in the Yazirut business, because at the time I left the zoo business, I was scheduled to be the, I guess the chairman of the education committee for zoos and aquariums in North America.
Okay.
But I never returned to the zoo business after that.
Okay.
Because I had to go elsewhere in the country, and I didn't want to move. I just bought a house, and a lot of other factors. I was involved in the Radio Television Corporation, and a bunch of other stuff. So.
And David,
life changed.
So you were with these guys for Señala after Zoroaster, which you then did another ascent of.
Two more ascents. One of the standard route with when I was working at High Adventure Headquarters, which is the retail store that Camp Trails own. And then later in 1978, when John Anarino and George Bain and I climbed the southwest face of Zoroaster. And then intermittently I climbed Buddha Temple. And then it was actually 72 that I climbed Angel's Gate with Chuck Graff. And then George Bain and I went out and climbed Mencius and Confucius Temple on the far, far west end at the end of, what's the end of that road that goes out past Teal Point?
You know. Vishnu Temple. Shiva Temple out there. Teal Point?
Teal Point. Well, I did. I climbed Shiva Temple too. That was later. That was not that long ago. I was up in age at that time. But we went out to, what's the end of that road out there? You know what I'm talking about?
Point Sublime.
Off of Point Sublime, there's Mencius and Confucius temples. George Bain and John Anarino and I went out. George and I climbed, and John went and did something else at the time.
Hmm.
And then I had a friend who was she still is, I think, unless she's retired, Wendy Hodgson, the herbarium curator at the Desert Botanical Garden in Phoenix. An old bud of mine, a really great, great lady. And she spent half her life out in the field collecting plant life for the botanical garden. And she was interested in the Grand Canyon in that a botany had been done along the river, obviously, because of easy access on the river and along the rim, but not of the inner canyon.
Hmm.
So I said, well, let's go in the inner canyon when I know some places. And I had this crazy idea that maybe on top of one of these temples, flat temples, something had evolved differently because, you know, over 5 million years, and we would find a first plant, and I could name it after me, or the agave agancii, or whatever it would be, you know. Well, she thought that might be a possibility. So Wen and I went into the inner canyon a number of times between the rim and the river, and then one time I took her on top of Deva Temple, which is the closest temple to the north rim. There's Deva Temple, there's Brahma Temple, then there's Zoroaster Temple. Deva's access from the north rim is a long beat out to get out there, relatively easy climb to the top. Got to the top of it, it's a mesa out there, so maybe we'll find something different. We didn't, but anyway, she got permits from the Park Service to do this, and I got to go with her, and got paid to do it. And she made an extensive collection of stuff in the inner canyon. And I think she discovered a couple unique plants that maybe one's named after her, but I never got my name on them.
Fun.
That was really interesting. She was a tough, tough lady. We carry our packs in plus a plant press, you know, and where she would, you know, put her plants in and stack them in a cardboard plant press. She was tough, tougher than I was. That was, gosh, when was that? Some of that was in the 80s. In the 80s, I think it was.
So you would certainly fit, but on a pretty punctuated, lots of time in between not climbing,
right,
climbing would fit one of the early people that actually came back again and again and again. I mean, Harvey was doing trails. Harvey wasn't a real summit climber, or at least he didn't like ropes. I mean, if he could get up there without a rope, he didn't want to use a rope.
Right.
So then I'm thinking about Ullman and you know, who were some of the other...
Gary Ullman.
Jim Ullman. Yeah.
I remember he used to approach me a couple of times and wanted me to take him up Zoroaster Temple, I think, because one temple he had never climbed. I remember talking to him.
There's only a couple he hasn't.
Really? I guess he's done... Well, same with, like, George Bain, right?
Right.
For 100 things.
Right.
Guys
right. Right.
I'm assuming this Jim Ullman isn't the James Ramsey Ullman, but maybe a relative of his.
This is Ullman. This is a different guy spelled. Ullman.
O-H-L-M-A-N.
Oh, okay. It's an O. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Not you.
Yeah. Ullman works for Peabody Coal out of Kayenta.
Oh,
and worked for Grand Canyon Trail Guides or Northrim Trail Guides when that operation was going, doing guided hiking out of the North Rim.
And so you're saying there's a couple of men that have made it their mission to climb all the temples?
Yes. Yeah.
Has anybody succeeded? Yep.
That's a very good question.
150, aren't
they? Yeah, something like that.
150 named ones?
If you want to look in the definition boundary of Grand Canyon National Park, there's a list there. If you want to include rim to rim, Lee's Ferry to Grand Wash Cliffs, that's a different list of named summits. But there's a list there. And a number of people are closing in. I think
George is one.
George Ullman. The Tomasis were after it very aggressively for a while, but they've kind of given up now a little bit. So there's
a lot of sandstone.
Obscure places out there that are difficult to get to, as you guys found out early on.
Yeah.
Just getting there is hard. Figuring out how to do it is hard. And then you finally get there and you have to back away again. So excellent.
Isis Temple is another one, I think. You haven't been up Isis? You have been. No.
I've been denied on Isis, so. I don't know if I'll get back there again or not. I might, but.
I don't know if I can make it either now, but I tried twice and couldn't make it.
You couldn't get to it?
Well, the first time, my ex-wife and her son and I, we're looking for a route to it at one time. We got stranded back over in, what's the name of the canyon?
Just above.
Phantom Creek. We went up and over and got stranded back there. It was a snowstorm came in March and stranded us there for 4 days. But I was just looking for a way to get to it, breaking the red wall that leads to it.
There is, in the back of Phantom Creek, yes.
Yeah, and then later, how many years ago is this now? Steve Williams and myself, Crazy James Dean, and another guy, we're going in to try and do it from the South Rim, which is a long, long way to get back in there. We got to the base of the Red Wall, and we just kind of ran out of food and ran out of motivation. I think it's just getting too old and tired. Just beat us out.
And Rink and Bain went up through the Red Wall off that Utah Flats route and made that work.
Yeah, we got spent on that one, I think, in the storm and all. Yeah. Oh, yeah, and then Cheops Temple, another one I climbed. George Bain and I took Wendy almost to the top of Cheops Temple. But again, those were spaced out. Yeah, it was never serious climbing. Climbing now is business. God, it's.
It isn't. I mean, there's still people that are still doing it for fun, like you guys were. So that's still happening.
But it just seems like I can't get interested in things like the climbing magazines anymore, because it's all about the 5.11.3 thing. It's just such a competitive thing. It's like, it's work. It seems like it's work now. Maybe I'm just a little fart talking about the young people.
Well, it's a profession for a lot of those guys. Right.
And there's people that all they do is inside climbing walls.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they don't go outside. A lot of people will look at Grand Canyon and just say, the rock's no good, I will not climb there. Okay.
Been there about 5 million years.
Are you familiar with this guide to the Grand Canyon? I don't know if you ever saw this. This was the center point of the map. I thought you'd be interesting.
Got our names on that one. First Ascent.
Was the centerfold for this guide has been recognized for the Grand Canyon. We've got some
James Kaiser, KAISER,
for it.
Winner of the National Travel Guide Award.
Yeah.
Nice. I just brought it along because I didn't know whether you'd seen it.
You got a copy of that?
don't have a copy.
Make a copy and send it.
I got a copy down here.
Yeah,
I'd like to make a copy of that as well.
You need, yeah, I'd like a copy of that.
You want copies of, like, the second stamp?
Yes, please. Written? Yes, please.
Do you want one of the Outside Magazine? Where are you going to make copies of all of these? This is all about Zoroasters. These are my notes on the first ascent.
Yeah, that'd be great.
That's what you sent me.
Yeah.
You sent me your notes on it.
Yeah, you're welcome to make.
Okay.
And this is a register.
I never wrote anything about it.
Okay.
With him writing it up. I want to mention that between Zorro and Senyala, it wasn't a total void for me. I had the opportunity in 1960 to go to Europe and spend a month climbing in the Alps. So.
Wow. What was that like?
That's true. Yeah.
Great adventure. I was there with John Horowitz. We had intended to go there and be the first Americans to climb the north face of the Eiger, but it was a very bad weather year, and we weren't really ready for that. Mm. But he did manage to do it 2 years later, the first American north face.
Was he the first American then?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well done.
And also, Dave, you went back. You went to McKinley and...
Well, when Rick and I took off,
you went back to
go to South
Peru.
America.
Yeah,
I got down climbing the Andes in South America, and ice and snow stuff, really neat. And then later years, we had the climb, drink beer summer with Charlie Rigdon and Kes Teeter. We climbed Mount Hood, Shasta, Rainier. And then went back to climb Mount McKinley, got blown off McKinley, 19,000 feet after 10 days.
When you say again, were you there a previous time?
McKinley?
Yeah. Were you there more than once?
No, McKinley. The next year, we climbed again, I guess, together. Went to McKinley we went in June, which was early, and there was a late winter. And when we started off, we were just following the wands of a German expedition that had gone ahead of us, and that's the only way we found our way, is following their wands, because it's white out. And I remember 10 days of just ice and snow and
wind, and
it's like,
what am I
Where's
doing?
The fun in this one? Am I getting too old for this shit? And we had three Optimus 111B stoves. Do you remember those nice stoves? All three of them failed at 19,000 feet. And we spent the next 2 days and a night in an ice cave, I remember, because of the storm, trying to make one of them work. And I remember we put an ice saw out at the entrance to the ice cave, and we could tell how fast the wind was blowing by how far the ice saw would go over like that. That was our gauge of when to go out and pee, when the ice saw would go like this. And we finally got the 111B working, one of them. And we were going to then continue on to climb McKinley, and we got up on, what was it? Forget which ridge it was. And we were all over five of us, as a matter of fact. I forget the other two guys. And we looked at each other and said, let's go to Hawaii. And we did. I was like, this is not fun. We'll
I'm going to wrap this up now. I'm just interested. What would you like to say to climbers 30, 40, 50 years from now?
It's a long time, Tom.
I'll start with you, Dave.
It's a long time. 40, 50 years from now?
Yeah.
God, where will it be? Where will it be in 40, 50?
It'll be a matter of new routes on top of old routes that are crisscrossing each other. I don't know. It seems
okay, like... all right. I'll say throw away all the technical gear and start over again. For the adventure of it, and this may sound sacrilegious, throw away the chalk, throw away the friends, boy, this is an old fart talking now, throw away the sticky fuse, throw away all the intricate hardware to belay and climb with, and just start basic and see what that's like. Yeah, it's just an old timer document. That's what I would do. I mean, how far? By then they'll be like spiders, right? They'll be like Spider-Man. It's like they'll have shoes that will stick to the rock. And their fingers, their gloves, like a football player, will have stuff on it that'll just stick to the rock. And I'm being facetious, I know, but hey, that's why I say, where's the adventure? Like I couldn't see adventure that much in what some of them are doing now. I mean, it's like it's all how fast we can do it, and they're like spider people. But that's just jealousy, I guess, talking old age, talking maybe. But see, go back to the adventure of it. Forget about how hard it is, and either you can do it or you can't, and have fun.
Yeah, for me, I'm just grateful that I grew up in the golden age of mountaineering and rock climbing, and got to meet some really neat people. Like I was looking here, did a first ascent with Nick Lynch, who's very famous in the mountaineering circles in Peru, that we had here on the peak, and got to do a consult job for Hillary in the early 60s. We failed to climb Makalu, and we had to go tape some things. And so just the neat people I got to climb with, like Leighton Kaur, Harvey Carter, Nick Lynch, and these two old farts here, Jerry Robertson and Dave Gansey. Great gratitude for that. It's just something, it's come and gone and never to be repeated in that way. And cherish that forever. And I think for me, the neat thing for me is Zoroaster's temple. Like, if we're the first people to be on top of that, which I think we were, that's over millions of years, and nobody can top that. And it's an icon. Everybody, millions of people see it, although they don't know anything about the history of it. But I know the adventure. So I'm lucky. I'm blessed.
It's hard to add anything to what you guys have said. I was just thinking about ice climbing as a adventure, because it's non-repeatable for the most part, roots. And we may not have any ice left in 50 years, I don't know.
Good point.
So,
when the roots...
Yeah, right. But there's so much extreme stuff that people do on the ice, it just blows you away, and they'll just keep doing it more and more extreme, I guess. Have you guys done any ice climbing? Rick has.
No, I've never done it.
Well, I've had some experiences on the snow.
Some a little bit, yeah.
Yeah. Well, the technology was pretty low grade in the 50s, yeah, for ice climbing. It's advanced like everything else in rock climbing, as well as mountaineering, has advanced tremendously.
I think it's the mental state of the people that do it now are so far advanced, I think, over like what they do now. I can't relate to. That's why I'm being an old fart talking about the old days, you know. I can't relate to some of the stuff.
And a lot of people are gymnasts.
And
they train. I never trained. Only thing I ever trained for was when Leighton and I did the winter ascent of second buttress of ballots, or pallets. I felt I needed to really get in shape because I knew it was going to be cold. We didn't have any idea what we were in for. And it was on the north slope, no sunshine. It was a winter ascent. But
you know, one of the big things that's really changed, I remember in the early days in Yosemite, we were there. Were there any girl climbers, any women climbers at all? And now look at that.
I don't remember one.
I don't remember
one woman climber who was really good. And that was with the Iowa Mountaineers. Don't recall her name. And also Dolores, my first wife. And Jerry was part of the wedding.
And his
wedding. Pretty good.
Two of them.
Yeah.
I pulled it against him for not letting me be his best man, but he had thick climates.
I would. Too.
Nick Kleingates was Attorney General of the year.
But yeah, look how far women have come in it, you know.
Oh, it was fantastic.
Oh, golly, yeah.
That's what's exciting. In fact, my daughter, Ashley, when I saw her in Morrison one day, 11 years of age, doing a 5'10 overhang.
Oh,
impressive.
Yeah, and trying to track down early women climbers in Grand Canyon, they were there, they came in late after you guys.
Really?
I mean, as in river running or, they were there, but the numbers were small and slowly. Even now, they're very
Georgia
small.
Georgia White?
Well, no.
Rafting.
The rafting, the people coming in, the women, okay, Elzeta Clover, Lois Jotter, Clover got that trip through Grand Canyon. But they were few and far between. And it's the same with climbing. In thinking about the first woman to summit Zoroaster, who was that? When was that?
That's a whole research project, is women climbers. Wow.
Have
you even thought about that?
Right. You see them in the registers. Wanda Myers. Who is Wanda Myers? She was climbing with Hans Bodenhammer when they went. They did Horus and Osiris and Ra and Set. Boom, 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 boom. Who was she? Where did she go? So these people are out there. It's a matter of researching and finding them out. Mm-hmm. It's like Merle Club. Who was Merle Club? Who are these people? I have to go look. They're out there. You just don't know. It's hard to connect the dots there.
Have you any interest in, or is the Park Service interest in, going back even further to the early Americans that lived down there? Has there been anything really done on that? I've read sketches of that. Well, Harvey did, right? Because he found these crazy roots off the rim down into the river.
The 36-mile route, the Bridge of Sighs route, is a really good example of basically what looks to be, there are some logs that are stuck in cracks.
Yeah.
And yucca fiber ropes are really strong.
Who knows, huh? Yeah.
Who knows?
Any evidence would be gone.
All we can do is we can document what our written tradition can tell us. But there's a Native American archaeological site every mile all the way through Grand Canyon.
Really?
From
yeah.
start to end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So those people were everywhere.
That's what I thought.
And there's a bridge of Sighs, Anasazi Bridge at 43 mile on the river. It's this little log structure that's placed across a crack way up this cliff face. You go past that bridge and around the corner, it goes off the 5 scale pretty damn fast. Huh. And I'm like, yeah, really?
Oh, damn.
So we just don't know.
Yeah, that history's probably buried somewhere in the bottom of the Colorado
River. Before recorded,
being a river runner, what are your thoughts of, if I digress for a moment, is of the early Americans using the river as a transportation corridor? Do you think?
So, before the dam, the river was warm in September, after the monsoons kind of petered out, and low. So 1,000 cubic feet a second, swimmable.
So,
why wouldn't we? Why wouldn't you? There was sand everywhere. It wasn't as vegetated along the shoreline as it is now. So walking the thing would have been easier. The water's warm. Why not? I mean,
up and down, right through the river.
I don't know about up, but I'd certainly go for down, because it's easy. I just have to float along. But again, you'd be stupid to say it didn't happen, because we don't know.
Good point.
Yeah.
But let's at least want to catch what
could have been done.
Absolutely could have been done.
Yep.
Yeah. I just want to kind of catch what we've got. Thank you guys so very, very much for your time coming over tonight.
Thank you for taking the time.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Before I turn this thing off, I do want to mention that there's discussion of doing a Granitica. I think you guys went down to the Babakivri one for Grand Canyon. And that might happen next year. So if it does, we'd definitely like to bring you guys in to that and talk about First Ascent Sinjala, First Ascent Zoroaster, That would be fun.
Yeah, it would be fun. I've got emails from Steve Grossman talking about this fall.
Is he thinking this fall?
That's the last thing I heard from him. He doesn't have a set date. But
I need to send him an email again because I started outreaching to him and then everything just stopped and I haven't heard back from him.
He must have your email. Did he contact you, Steve Grossman? We need to get Rick's email.
Right. Is he thinking about doing that in November then?
I think that's what he's talking about. Okay. Don't quote me for sure.
I've got his email because there was communication.
Okay. Well, I need to make a note. And
obviously, and I got an email that he had sent George Bean, and George sent back to him.
Okay.
About he's wanting images, digital images, to choose what to use at the Granitica.
Okay.
And I think George probably has thousands of them.
Oh, he does.
Yeah. From hundreds, a cent.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. And then he was making whatever. I don't know what he's going to do.
So that's already happening. Let's just spool that up and make sure that happens. Yeah. So I think that'll be a lot of fun to do that.
Yeah. Cool.
All right, well, I'm going to turn this off. Thank you guys very, very much.